The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic. Coming up this week...
Buendia cuts it back and it's yet another goal for Ollie Watkins, and Aston Villa are running away with this.
Battered, a little bruised but ready to bounce back. Newcastle humbled by Watkins and co at Villa.
Rachel Lee, right-footed, made it look simple.
Newcastle's women hit Bradford for six to get promotion pushed back on track.
Reece in trouble, loses out to Callum Wilson, who scores! Spurs are raging!
And another huge weekend in store for men and women alike. Hello, this is Pod on the Tyne. I am Taylor Payne, and as we enter the final months of the season, it's all starting to get a little bit real, isn't it? But I've got three lovely chaps here to help me navigate the drama. How are we doing, Chris Woff? Are you all right?
I'm a lot better than I was on Saturday evening, yes, having been down in Birmingham and having watched what we're about to discuss. But yes, I'm feeling very good this morning. Thank you, Taylor. How are you?
I'm not too bad at all. Had a lovely day at the women's game yesterday, so I'm feeling refreshed, ready to attack the week. How are you doing, Jacob? Are you all right?
I'm good. Had a weekend where every single one of my teams lost, but apart from that...
Always fun.
It's a new week, at least.
It is. And George Calkins here as well.
You allowed multiple teams, are you?
It's multi-sport.
Jacob knew that I was coming from this morning, so he's like trying to get in.
Is he preempted?
He tried to get in there a bit early because spoke to him last week, and obviously Jacob's now... in situ in Newcastle, which is great and very exciting. And he confessed to me on Saturday, as we had the misfortune of watching that match on the television, that whilst he was away on holiday, he said, "Oh, I had this like terrible feeling that Newcastle scored against Man U, and I found myself punching the air, and it's like, oh no, it's like I can't start supporting another team." And I was like, at that moment, I knew we've got him.
That's it.
We fucking got him.
He's in
our grasp, and we will not let go.
I think we'll see what's happening next Thursday when it's Everton Newcastle at Goodison, and the podcast after that will like lay a lot of things bare. But I'd wait until before you reach any firm.
As to whether you abandon your current club because they're going to be going down, and so you're just thinking, "Oh, let's sack them off."
Yeah. Don't do relegation.
That promises to be a podcast that you would label too hot for TV and put it on at 10 o'clock on Channel 5. That's what we should do.
I've had it said about me before.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was the early kickoff, wasn't it, chaps? And as you know, never back the early kickoff. It's always a shit show. And that's exactly what it was, Chris Woff. It was an absolute shit show. Villa were at us from the start. Watkins, Ramsey, Moreno wreaking absolute havoc down the left-hand side. And Newcastle were out Newcastle, weren't they?
They were. I mean, I know that Howe came out and said it, and a lot of fans have said it subsequently, that Newcastle just weren't at the races and sort of they looked so below par. But maybe it was because maybe if you weren't in the stadium, it didn't quite come across on the TV. But it was about 5 minutes in, and you just got a sense from the Newcastle players that they were almost shell-shocked by the start that Villa had made.
Yeah.
That it was, as you said, Villa did to Newcastle what Newcastle have done to so many other sides this season, and that is disrupt their rhythm, be quicker to everything, be physical, be direct in certain ways, target certain potential weak spots of the side, and then other things fall apart on the back of that, and Newcastle just couldn't find a way back into the game. I've not seen a team do that to them. I've not seen a team be that athletic and physical against them and be successful doing it. Brentford went quite direct the week before, and that caused Newcastle a heck of a lot of problems, certainly in the first half and in the last 10-15 minutes. But Villa were more pacey, they were clever about what they tried to do. But even then, I mean, it was sort of like straight balls, diagonal balls forward towards Newcastle's defence, which they just could not deal with.
Yeah.
And what I thought was fascinating, I had a conversation before the game with Greg Evans, our Villa report. And I'd been on a Villa fan podcast during the week, and they'd said to me, if you were playing against Newcastle, what is the one thing that you would avoid doing, or you would try and exploit? And I said, well, I would not pass it out from the back, as I know that Unai Emery teams have done since he's arrived at Villa, because Newcastle want to press. Mm. They're getting goals from pressing high and nicking it. And Villa have doggedly, under Unai Emery, even when it hasn't gone particularly right, done it. But on Saturday, what they did was they got Martinez to beat the first line of the press with his clear out, and Newcastle didn't have anything after that. Once they beat that first line of the press, Newcastle didn't seem to know what to do, and there were gaps all over the pitch, and it could and probably should have been more than 3-0.
We spoke last week, George, about Newcastle giving teams chances, big chances, early doors, and I think, what was it, 28 seconds when Aston Villa hit the post, and Newcastle just didn't look right from the kickoff, did they?
No, I mean, it is that strange thing. I mean, you know, Chris talked about that sort of feeling within 5 minutes of it not kind of feeling right, but I had exactly the same feeling at Brentford the week before. Yeah. You know, Brentford should have been 3-0 up at halftime, really. And I had a bit of the same feeling at West Ham in the midweek when, you know, West Ham had that incredible chance within the first minute. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether that's a theme or not. It certainly feels like, I mean, it is something that's happened in those last three games. But what didn't happen at Villa was that there was no kind of response at all. I mean, maybe briefly at the start of the second half, but I mean, not much of it. And but you know, we also have to take a step back a little bit and say that's the three away games in a row against two of them, you know, very good teams, and 6 points from nine is not a disaster from that. It's just that this is the last one, so it kind of feels dramatic. I think that was, you know, by talking to Chris yesterday and speaking to people who, you know, who watch a lot more of Villa, that was probably Villa's best performance of the season, and it was probably Newcastle's worst performance of the season.
Yeah.
So put those two things together, that can happen. I don't think it's a case of panicking and you know, and all the rest of it. But no, it wasn't fun to watch, because the one thing you do sort of expect from Newcastle is for there to be a response, and there just wasn't one at all.
Yeah, they were struggling, Jacob, to tie a few passes together. They weren't getting out properly. The ball wasn't getting down the sides at all. There was no chances being created, and Villa just ran havoc, didn't they? Watkins was all over our back four, and they didn't know how to deal with him.
Yeah, I mean, I had a misfortune of watching the goals back again this morning and the other chances, and I was sort of looking to see if there's any kind of particular individual mistakes, kind of, and in a way I couldn't so much see that. There's just a kind of general passiveness where, take the first goal for example, it's a brilliant cross, but Byrne doesn't stop the cross. Then when the ball spills out to Ramsey, there's no one in Newcastle shirt picking it up. It's just a succession of chances like that where just kind of a passivity which isn't something which Newcastle fans have been accustomed to this season, which just kind of imbued throughout the performance.
And I mean, there weren't any changes at half-time, Chris, and we thought there might be, but it didn't take long, did it? And Miggy Almiron and Callum Wilson were introduced. There was a little bit of an uplift at the start of the second half. Newcastle looked like they were going to try and get back into the game, but it just didn't happen for them, did it?
It didn't. I mean, the problem was that Newcastle started to get a few opportunities. Isak had the one where he forced a save from Martinez over the bar. Bruno Guimaraes flicked it over for Miguel Almiron, who hit the side netting.
Yeah,
but the issue was, and I don't know if they came through on the TV, the game was just so wide open at that stage. And so whenever the ball then came out of the box, Villa were attacking, and Villa just looked dangerous. They'd looked dangerous every time they went forward in the first half, but in the second half, because of the form that Watkins is in, you thought, this, unless Newcastle can get a goal in the next couple of minutes, this is not going to end well for them. Obviously, Watkins gets the goal, which is disallowed marginally for offside.
Yeah.
But that doesn't deter him. And he really did give Newcastle's back four a torrid time. I thought that Trippier was exposed defensively in terms of not having maybe the cover that he would get usually with Longstaff on that side.
Yes, absolutely.
Joe Linton had his worst performance I can remember in a long, long while. Bizarrely, was very high upfield for large parts of the game, even when Newcastle was struggling. I thought it was very unlike him, and obviously he got hooked early as well, so I don't know if that was something to do with physical output or what it was. But then you had Cher, who first half in particular was absolutely woeful. I mean, he could not deal with Watkins in the air or down below, and they just kept on running behind him. Then Botman was dragged out of position because of it. His passing went awry. And on the other side, weirdly, it wasn't like a lot of teams have done recently, which was to mainly target Newcastle's left-back position, because they did target the right-back position as well. But then Byrne was dragged so far out of position, as Jacob said, didn't stop the first cross, really was outmatched by, well, didn't really get anywhere near John McGinn for large parts. And then I sort of felt for Matt Target to a certain degree when he came on, because he came on and he was just as bad. But when you sort of parachuted into that situation, having had so little football in such a long period of time, it's difficult. But it just felt like the Premier League's meanest defence as it still is, but it feels like after one clean sheet in 12 games, conceded three times the first time all season in a single match, it feels like it may have come to a natural end where there needs to be a freshen up of the back four. I do feel like next weekend, I think that sort of maybe impenetrable feeling that there was previously about that defence is no longer there, and I think just changing it up maybe might just shake everyone back into hopefully some sort of form.
I think Moreno as well, the Villa left back, had an absolutely brilliant game. It's the most trippery performance. That's not a very good word, but is the most
trippery
you're having a Newcastle at Villa Park here, Joe. Come trippery. On, get it.
Anyway, his slippery trippery performance sort of why the right hand, you know, I think that's to some extent why it felt like Newcastle's right side was being targeted rather than their left. Everything went through him as a conduit. Like, it was a really impressive performance from him just to, you know, carry on giving Villa their flowers.
It's an absolutely shocking result. But we're not panicking, George, are we? We've still got a lot of football to play. I mean, we are getting towards the sharp end of the season, but Newcastle still have it completely in their own hands.
You know, I think the thing is that the good thing about Newcastle is that very much felt like an exception taken over the course of the season. I think, you know, we also have to accept when you have a performance like that, when you have a result like that, when your whole feeling is about looking at Newcastle in isolation, then of course it feels very, very disappointing. But bigger picture, they'd won five on the spin before then. Bigger picture, they're still in the top four. It's been a brilliant season. We don't want it to slip off. And of course, that's the instant reaction to it, you know, that maybe things will go wrong. But over the course of however many games they've played this season, it's not happened yet. So I would bat them to get a response.
I've started to get that feeling now, though. You know how earlier in the year we were saying, oh, it's okay, they'll do what they do, you know, and if we finish sixth or seventh or eighth, it's all good, everything's fine. And I'm starting to get that little feeling in my chest now, which says, oh, I really want to do this now. I really, really want to do this now. And the Champions League is within our reach.
Totally.
And it wasn't expected this year, but it feels like it could be there, you know. And if we don't get it, I will be really disappointed now. Whereas earlier on the season, I was like, hey, it's a free hit, go for it. Let's enjoy the ride while we're here. But now I'm starting to feel a little bit nervous about this. And as I said at the start of the podcast, it's all getting a bit too real for me now. And a couple of games slip by and you think, have we got it in us? You know, I don't know, Chris. Maybe I'm just being melodramatic. Maybe I'm entering typical fan mode and starting to get panicky, but I don't know. It feels different now to what it did about 6 or 8 weeks ago.
Yeah, and that's only natural, because then it was still sort of like that distant dream, whereas now it feels tangible. It feels like something that, given the way Newcastle have performed for the vast majority of the season, you feel that up to this stage of it, they deserve that, and you'd like them to go on. And I do think they will. I mean, I actually said this before the game to a few people last week, that I had thought for a long while Newcastle might get pipped and finish fifth or sixth, but as of the last 10 days, I've reassessed that.
Right.
Not so much because of Newcastle, although obviously they were on a good run before Saturday, but more because I don't think that the other teams are good enough. I don't think Spurs have it in them to keep going. Man United probably will finish in the top four as well. Brighton are obviously coming on ahead of steam, but I think it might just be just beyond them. Villa have probably left a little bit too late. So I think that this is no consolation, because I am terrible at predictions, but I think that they are going to do it now. I think that they will get there. But I understand the alarmist element from Saturday, but I did think, and it wasn't just social media, it was certain people I spoke to as well, I did think it was a little bit sort of over the top. They had just won five games in succession. I know that to a certain degree elements of the performance were coming. I know that to lose 3-0 at Villa Park, and really it should have been 5 or 6 potentially, heading into what is now the biggest game of the season, left for Newcastle, is a cause for concern. But you've got to remember where they have been all season and what they have been doing. And this was seemed to be an aberration of a performance, and you can never say that for certain until you get into the next match. But yeah. I'd be shocked if Newcastle were anything like that team that we saw on Saturday next weekend. I think that they will be better for it. I think that at St James's, that's a completely different factor. Newcastle also have 5 of the last 8 games at St James's, which I think makes a huge difference compared to other teams. So yes, it was concerning in many ways, but I also think, and I'm speaking ahead of Sunday when I suppose that could change completely, but I think that you have to try and have a bit of a level head about this and realise that this was probably an aberration.
Yeah.
Just on that sort of sense of like social media stuff and the response and things like that, I don't want this to be about social media, but part of me also sort of kind of defends that. I mean, I was at Brentford in the away end the week before, and during the first half, I'm screaming at the pitch. I mean, I'm never abusive yeah. towards individual players because that's just not who I am, and I would never boo my team. I would never do that either. But at the same point, there are points in the match when I'm shouting, what the fuck are you doing that for? It's like, cross, shoot, why didn't you shoot? You know, I'm doing all that. I'm getting angry, and I'm being invested. And so when you see sort of some, I mean, actually watching, you know, looking at the sort of NUFC hashtag during a match is very, very funny because it's a bit like being at the match and people responding immediately to bad things happening. And, I don't condone the abuse of it. I think the players deserve more than that. But at the same time, I do understand it because it is that feeling that you're responding to the sort of instant and you're responding to something bad that happens. You know, so anyway, I just wanted to sort of say that it's, you know, watching it on Twitter is a bit like being at the match. And, you know, Taylor, you said you kind of
I got really
illustrated
annoyed.
Your frustration. Yeah.
It's
yeah,
hard because I think
that's okay. I mean,
I think part of it is that you feel, you know, you've got no control as a fan. And when you see it slipping away like no. that, you kind of go, oh, come on. I know it's so much better than this. Why is it gone to shit this much? You know,
during a game's different to 12 hours, 24 hours afterwards, though. I was more referring to some of that. Yeah. Like, I've spoken to people subsequently as well. It's not just, I understand that, dude. But I also think,
no.
And again, that's been a fact. And I realise I'm trying to do it from a semi-objective sort of position that I'm looking at it as a journalist trying to analyse the situation. And it supporters aren't rational and that sort. It's not a rational thing to be a supporter of any sport and following your team. But I do think that if you just take a little bit of a step back and just on the basis of one performance, I don't think you can be too alarmist.
No. And they deserve the chance to put it right, and they deserve our forbearance and patience because it's, you know, this is an achievement this season. I agree with Chris. I think at this, and I agree with you, Taylor, at this point of the season, when they've been in the top four more or less the entire season, to, you know, we're now mid-April, to drop out of it now with 7-8 games left would feel very, very disappointing. I'm not sure, though, bigger picture, whether it is a disappointment, because, as we've said countless times, the aim this season was top 10, was to do better in the cups. They've done both of those things. You know, I'm desperate for this season not to have that, you know, to have that sort of underwhelming feel to it by the end, because it's been astonishing. It has been absolutely astonishing. And, yeah, I would certainly have faith both in Eddie Howe and the players to really respond and push. I mean, I think I assumed earlier on this season that Liverpool would come good. I thought that Chelsea would come good. I thought Tottenham would be less haphazard than they've been and all the rest of it. So this is a massive, massive opportunity. But they've absolutely risen to every single thing that's been put in front of them this season. So I'd back them to do it again.
Well, let's quickly just hear from Eddie Howe as well, and he agreed it was probably the worst performance of the season when he was asked after the game.
Yes, I think it probably was. We weren't great today. Hugely disappointed in such a big fixture. In all disciplines, we were slightly off our best, and we got punished by a very good team. So as I'm sat here now, I'd want to see the game again before making far-reaching assessments of what I've seen, because I think the game always looks different and with no emotion. So there were some good bits for us today. I think there were some moments where you think something could drop for us or happen, but there was no product to our work. So I think it's just a disappointing day we have to analyse, but then move on quite quickly, because at this stage of the season with such few games to go, you really want to focus on what's ahead, not what's gone. Sometimes these things do happen in football. Sometimes just the start of the game, you know, the first attack where they nearly score, I think Watkins hits the post, that can have a bearing on, you know, what happens after. So we let the crowd get into the game off the back of that, which was a disappointment. And it was a tough afternoon. I spoke with the players and gave my feelings, but the main focus is on what our response will be. And we need to make sure that we're not that team again sometimes these things, when they happen, can be a good thing, because it just reminds everyone of the fragility of performance, really. It's a very fragile thing, and you have to respect it at all times. I think Brentford, there was probably a reason, a more simple reason, that came with the fact that, you know, we had stayed in London and a hectic spell of games. And yeah, so probably you're looking at that and going, I can understand that today was less easy to explain. I respect the group, and I respect their attitudes and commitment and what they've given me to this stage of the season. So there's no fallout from that. It's a case of understanding why and then trying to put it right.
Interesting listening to that from Eddie Howe, Jacob, isn't it? He kind of mirrors what Kieran Trippier said after the game as well, that Newcastle just have to move on and try and forget about this result and focus on what's left to do.
Yeah, for sure. I think one thing which is quite interesting is that Newcastle this year have been quite a streaky team, and not in terms of luck, but in terms of pattern of results. So at the start of the year, they were drawing loads, then they won loads, then they drew loads again, then they lost a few, and now they've won the last five and lost this. There hasn't been... They seem to go in little bursts of results.
Is that
and
you saying we're going to lose against Spurs on Sunday? Is that what you're saying there?
Now I'm a supporter, no.
If you were a true supporter, you'd be saying yes to that. But anyway, yeah.
I'll learn. But yeah, that's what they need to overcome, is to avoid that streakiness. And they've done it before, but it's a massive game. You need to do it quickly.
I think sort of just going back to what Chris said a bit earlier on about things needing a freshen up. I think if you go back to Man U, that was a brilliant performance and a brilliant result.
Yeah.
And I think there have been a few warning signs since then. I mean, obviously, yeah, talking about those sort of early chances conceding. But, you know, we have to remember Eddie Howe furious at 2-0 up at West Ham, the first half at Brentford, and then, you know, the overall performance at Villa. They've done brilliantly to get out of those, you know, those earlier games with 3 points. But perhaps, you know, perhaps this is a week to sort of step back a bit, to make a change or two, to freshen things up, to inject a bit of competition in there. And yeah, they have lost that steeliness at the back.
Yeah.
So again, I think it's, the stats would be interesting. Has any other team changed fewer players in their back five this season? I don't know the answer to that, but you can't imagine that many teams would have been so solid at the back. They've been absolutely brilliant, those players. They've been up, you know, they've been astonishing, all of them, to a man, you know, absolutely, including Dan Byrne, who's played all season in a kind of unfamiliar position to him, or not his natural position. But yeah, maybe it's time to freshen things up a bit.
Right then, there, plenty more Spurs chat later on. But before we have a quick break, get yourselves over to theathletic.com/Newcastle pod and pick up a subscription to The Athletic and pay just $1.99 a month for your first year. We'll be back in just a tick. So, 24,000 Geordies look to put Saturday's disappointment behind them by heading to St James's Park to support the women's team, where they face Bradford in a must-win game in the FA Women's National League Division 1 North.
Newcastle United, who were led out by their goalkeeper and skipper Grace Donnelly, as they play at St James's Park for only the third time in their history.
Here comes the Newcastle corner. Georgia Gibson, right-footed in-swinger to the back post, heading into the top of the net.
And the goal that Newcastle United wanted to get themselves going today has arrived. It looks like it might be Beth Guy.
Gibson, outswinging corner. They scored from their last one, and they've scored from this one. Charlotte Potts and Newcastle have managed to double their lead. The second 45, Newcastle looking for more goals, because goal difference is possibly what will count at the end of the season. Rachel Lee with support on the right side, options to the left as well. She's gone over the top for Gibson. Keepers off her line. Georgia Gibson saved. She's got the rebound and puts it into the back of the net. Georgia Gibson has scored 3 in 3 at St James's Park. Great cross swung in. This is Elson. Oh, that's got to be a penalty. And it is. Rachel Lee, right-footed, made it look simple. And Charlotte Potts sends the free kick from halfway into the box. Keeper comes and misses it. And Newcastle United
have goal number five. And is it Beth Guy again with a header? Plenty in the middle on the 6-yard line. It's high towards the back post. Donnelly's lost it. And it's gone in. Straight in from the Bradford City free kick. Set pieces have been excellent today. Another corner. Newcastle header. And they've got goal number six. And they have restored their 5-goal advantage. And Charlotte Potts has got her second of the afternoon up from the back. Newcastle United 6, Bradford City 1 in the 85th minute. And as it's kicked up towards halfway, the final whistle is blown. Newcastle United's women remain second in the table.
Six-1 victors, George. What an afternoon. It was a blinder, wasn't it?
Brilliant. Just so good to see so many people there. And it was a huge match for them. Arguably the biggest they've had at St James's when they've played there. They absolutely needed to win. And my goodness, they got a win. I mean, Bradford did get a goal. I have no idea how that happened because I can't remember them crossing the halfway line at any point during the match.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought they were terrible. But at the same time, Newcastle absolutely did what they had to do.
Yeah.
Clinical. They were all over them. And yeah, I mean, really good. In fact, we were all there apart from Chris, who, you know, absolutely needed some time to recover in a darkened room after being at Villa the day before. But,
yeah,
you know, it's just great to see so many kids there, loads of girls, loads of young women as well, and families.
Yes.
And we know it's very difficult for people to get in to watch the men's team at the minute, but at the same time, you don't want to have a generation of people missing out. You've got to get the club under people's skin, and it's just really good. It's really good. And after a very disappointing late equaliser the week before, it was just a really good response to that.
It was a really lovely atmosphere inside St James's Park, Jacob, wasn't it? Me and you had a little chat beforehand, and the PA system was blaring over the top of our conversation, so we couldn't really hear each other. But I noticed there was an awful lot of younger people in there, a lot of families, probably a lot of people who it might have been their first ever experience at St James's Park, and it was great to see, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was great to see. Like, the amount of tiny kids waving flags about 10 times the size of them and sort of swaying in the wind as they tried to hold one up was a really nice sight to see. It's really nice actually at the end as well, all the players very much like interacting with everyone after, like really nice. It's like a community feeling at such a big stadium, massive crowd. No, it's lovely.
Yes, it was really, really lovely. And 2-0 up at half-time as well, and they probably should have been a bit further in front. Both goals coming from corners, headers, and it was a great atmosphere inside the ground. When the ball went in the net, there was a big roar from the crowd, exactly as you would expect. It was great fun. Everyone seemed to be up for the game as well. And they've said as well in the past that the team have got a real style of play, and they're trying to play the same way as the men's team do, and they've got the same approach. And there was definitely that physicality and that intensity there in the play, wasn't there?
Yeah, no, totally. And you sort of mentioned that physicality and all the rest of it. I mean, I think that's one thing that Becky Langley has been very keen to do. She's spoken a lot, obviously, to Dan Ashworth, but also to Eddie Howe. And the idea is that, you know, that this is a sort of... you know, that this is a club philosophy about, you know, I think that idea of intensity, that idea of being, you know, playing really good front-footed football, but doing it with a level of aggression and feistiness, that you know, that whole mantra of intensity is our identity, that's deliberate. And I think also, you know, that's part of what they've faced this season. Newcastle are now seen, you know, because of the relationship with the club as a whole, they're part of the club. Other teams see them coming, and you know, they sort of have to have that kind of mentality, I think.
Yeah,
really good. And you know, this is just the start of the something. This is the fourth tier. I mean, to have a crowd
astonishing
the size that it was in the fourth tier is brilliant. And you hope that these people will stay involved. It's a bit less glamorous at Kingston Park, but I love the atmosphere at Kingston Park during matches. And the idea is that the club rises and grows, and you know, hopefully Newcastle become known for the passion of their support at this level and with the women's team just as much as they are for the men. But yeah, games like this, I just think they're really good. There's no negative to them, is there?
And it was 2-0 at halftime, but more goals were an absolute necessity given the goal difference situation at the top of the table. And Becky Langley had a plan for that.
I think with regards to the goal difference, I think it was really important that we obviously kicked on and made sure it was a high-scoring game, but we didn't want to ensure that the focus wasn't taken away from actually winning the game and gaining 3 points. So for the first half, we just focused on, can we get a 2-3 goal cushion? And then from then on, then we'd start getting the ball back as quickly as we could to the centre circle and go from there. So brilliant, we scored 6. I'm frustrated in the first half. We didn't convert some more of those chances. I think we entered the final third about 17 times in the first half, which again, we have people doing the stats to ensure we're really fully informed in everything we're doing. So yeah, we're disappointed in the fact we've not kept a clean sheet. But yeah, overall, dominant performance, and we'll just celebrate that now.
Lovely stuff. Durham Sestria have one game left and goal difference now equal on plus 33. Newcastle United with 2 games in hand, obviously. Despite Bradford's consolation, it's a fine result, isn't it? And probably should have had a second penalty as well with an absolutely disgraceful tackle in the box. One of the Bradford players getting away with a Botman there, Jacob. I'm not sure how they didn't give a penalty for it, but it was an awful tackle.
Yeah, I was sat next to the analysts and impressed from both sides. And it was one of those where you just see sort of one lot go up, the other lot turn around and give them absolute daggers. I was too far away. Maybe she got a toe on the ball. I don't know. But it was a cruncher.
It was an absolute cruncher. Jacob, you were in the manager's post-match press conference, and there was a special mention for Anna Soulsby and Rachel Lee, who missed the previous games at St James' Park with knee injuries, and Langley was delighted for those two and made reference to the team's injury problems earlier in the season as well, didn't she?
Yep, and both of them were really good as well. Soulsby's delivery was brilliant throughout. There's one cross she put in from the right-hand side, which Barker converted, but given offside, but was an absolutely delicious ball. Lee scored a penalty, and then after was running around on the pitch with, I presume was her daughter. Langley talked about the impact of injuries, about how before they were taken over by the football club, that they weren't able to afford surgeries, and how Anna Soulsby had waited 6 months for her ACL to be repaired.
Wow.
And was now come back to play in this game, and just it's kind of that backstory, which means that these events are such significant moments for the women's team.
And Charlotte Potts at the back, I thought she was astonishing.
Superb,
as well.
Yeah.
I mean, scored goals, but proper marauding centre half, getting forward at every opportunity.
Yes, another thing which I noticed as well, which I really enjoyed, was as the players were warming up, some of the subs were warming up, they were waving to their families in the crowd, and you could just see the pride on some of those parents' faces who were watching their girls playing at St James's Park. It was a lovely, lovely moment. Another lovely moment as well, George, there was a presentation at halftime for the development side, the winners of the FAWNL Reserve Plate with a 100% record. Amanda Staveley on the pitch there, Mirdad Gadusi there standing next to her, and that was a nice moment as well.
Yeah, and it was very, very noticeable how Amanda Staveley in particular was absolutely engaging with the individual members of that team, talking to them, hugging them. She obviously knew them. Yeah. She obviously knows them. And we know how much they're invested on the women's side of the team, and in particular, how much she is. So that was kind of good to see. And yeah, it's not just about the first team, is it? It's about all levels, and it's about, you know, she in particular, and you know, hopefully all of us would sort of recognise the importance of encouraging participation from women and young women.
100%, yeah.
Playing a game, but also, you know, coming into the stadium and feeling part of it there too. So no, really, really good, and what a fantastic achievement for them. Fantastic.
Absolutely. And no doubts about the job for Newcastle United as well. Win the remaining games and we're up. All three are away from home, with Leeds first this coming Sunday at 2 p.m.
Yeah, that's right. It's three Yorkshire trips. It's a pretty brutal way to end the season. And the last game is at Barnsley, and Barnsley are third. So it's a tough end to the season. But come on, they can do it. I can do it.
Absolutely. Right, we'll be back in a little bit to talk about that Spurs game. See you soon. So Spurs being Spurs, they followed up the Newcastle defeat at Villa with an agonising home loss to Bournemouth, conceding a winner in injury time and having just equalised. Manchester United did take advantage, comfortably beating Nottingham Forest, but it's still very much 3-2 for the Champions League spots. The squad is pretty close to full fitness, Chris. You would say Alan Saint-Maximin, what's going on with him? I know there was a lovely little video of him running along a pier in France, which looked quite idyllic. What's all that about?
Well, just before coming on that, I don't agree that it's 3-2. I think that...
How many do you think it is?
Well, I think that Brighton, you certainly have to be considered. I mean, Brighton have two games in hand, albeit they are... I think 7 points behind.
Well, I tell you what, Chris, why don't you write the fucking links next week? Yeah?
Why don't you introduce this podcast, Chris?
Aston Villa are 6 points behind, haven't played a game more, but I don't think that it is. I've said I think that Newcastle will finish the Champions League, but I just wanted to follow back on that because I don't think that's true. Anyway, when it comes...
Always a nugget of shit with Chris, isn't it? Always.
Chris wants to introduce the podcast, he wants to answer the questions, he wants to sing the theme tune.
Yeah, write the theme tune.
I mean, what
tune,
else?
Yeah.
What else do you want to do, Chris? Yeah. Come on.
We've heard my singing previously, I don't think we want that again, do we?
Definitely not.
But in terms of Alan Saint-Maximin, yes, he was out in France, weirdly with a dodgy hamstring, showing himself sprinting along...
Running along the
French Riviera. But he was in France last week with a member of Newcastle's fitness staff. He returns to Tyneside at some point this week. I think there's a chance he will be involved next weekend. I do think Newcastle have missed him. I think certainly in home games like this as well, he's shown that he gets up for the games against the very biggest teams at St. James's, those really huge occasions, and he gives that ability to do something, to create something out of nothing, to give that ingenuity in the final third, which Newcastle probably lack. Miguel Almiron returned early from injury on Saturday, which was hilarious because as soon as Eddie Howe was asked post the international break whether Miguel Almiron might return early, and he said, no, I'm pretty sure he's going to be out for the full 6 weeks. You knew for a fact that Miguel Almiron was going to be back in. And lo and behold, Miguel Almiron
returned. It's not as smoke and mirrors as what he thinks, is it? Let's be honest.
He returned 2 weeks before ahead of schedule, and I think he has a decent chance of maybe pushing his way back into the 11. Obviously, still Newcastle's top goal scorer, very good at leading the press. And so that gives an additional option there, because I do think that maybe in the last couple of matches, Newcastle's wide options haven't looked very deep, haven't looked like they've got a lot. Suddenly, they've looked a bit thin on the ground and lacking a bit of inspiration in the final third. So, yes, so beyond that, they also had tonsillitis for Sean Longstaff. He was deemed not fit enough to start on Saturday, but I would have thought after a full week he'd be back, and hopefully at least bordering on getting close to full fitness, because his energy and his ability to get around the pitch I thought was missed at Villa Park.
Yeah, there was talk, Jacob, wasn't there, about how that impacted Bruno Guimaraes in the midfield as well, not having Sean Longstaff alongside him.
Bruno got swarmed. We said earlier that Jellinton struggled, and with the fact that he kind of bypassed that press, I mean, with Murphy and Gordon, we should have had quite pressing wingers, but that wasn't present, and so he was having to firefight everything, and yeah, no dice.
George, with Anthony Gordon as well, it's an interesting one. He was one of the players who made way early. Obviously, we saw his reaction at Brentford to being substituted. Do we think he's got another start in him under Eddie Howe, or do you think maybe he'll be put aside now that Alan Saint-Maximin might be back?
Yeah, it's a very interesting one, because I don't think anybody who played really did themselves a favour. It was a good match to miss in that sense. You know, I think some people would have argued that Sean Longstaff might have been due a rest. He misses it and suddenly you think, oh no, we missed him.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those games. I think nobody's position should be safe, probably barring Nick Pope, after a game like that. I thought that Gordon helped change the game at Brentford along with Wilson more so, and I don't think we saw enough from him at Villa, albeit it was a bad team performance all round. Chatting with Chris in the pub after the match yesterday, he sort of making the point about how raw Gordon still is, and I think that was that's the right assessment. I think he is. I think he's going to get better. I like his energy and all the rest of it. But and I think it's something that Jacob might look at for us this week as well. So. Not a convincing performance, but also it's very difficult to judge him or indeed anybody on that. I mean, I think all the mainstays in the team. I don't think Willock had a good game. I don't think, really, I don't think anybody had a good game.
No, and Chris, prior to this season, we'd only won one of the 10 meetings between Newcastle and Spurs. But that game in August, in the pissing down rain, was when we started to get the ball rolling, wasn't it? And there's a sense that tactically Spurs are a good fit for Newcastle.
Well, yeah, I mean, that certainly seemed to be the case down at Spurs when Newcastle, again, the high press really worked. The mistakes they forced from Lloris, and Almiron also won the ball out wide Longstaff won the ball out wide for Almiron's goal.
Yeah.
And Newcastle were excellent there. That was one of their best performances of the season. Probably the first time where you suddenly thought, actually, this Newcastle side could go far if they can maintain anything like consistency from this. Spurs at St James's have had a decent recent record after years of being pretty poor, but I just think, as I said earlier in the podcast, I think the St James's Park atmosphere and the fact Newcastle have 5 home games makes such a difference. This feels like, I think it's certainly a must not lose for Spurs, but I think it's a borderline they need to win it in terms of to come to St James's to redress it. The fact that they lost those 3 points at home to Bournemouth last weekend, they come to St James's and head-to-head, Newcastle already have a game in hand. They've got a far superior goal difference as well, so that's essentially like another point.
Yeah.
And I do think that in a perverse sort of way, maybe the best thing for both sides, both Newcastle and Spurs, was what happened to them in terms of for this game, was what happened to them the weekend. It's woken both sides up and they know how huge an occasion it is, but I just think the St James's Park factor will be the difference.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to look back at the Manchester United game, you know, from a Newcastle perspective to see what is needed and also to show what's possible. That was such a good, strong, convincing performance. It was brilliant in the stands. Everybody on the pitch was totally up for it. Everybody understood what was at stake.
Yeah.
Everybody was together and united, and it was just a magnificent occasion, and I would expect it to be the same. And, you know, Tottenham are there to be beaten. Before the Bournemouth match, they had beaten Brighton, but then before that, they could only draw at Everton, they could only draw at Southampton. I don't think they're a good team. And then after this weekend, they've got games against Manchester United and then Liverpool.
Yes.
So this could be the start of sort of finishing them off. I think that's the way Newcastle have to approach it. They've had a really bad performance and result, but this is absolutely the kind of occasion that focuses minds, and they've shown this season that when they really need to, they can get a good result against teams who are up there.
Well, there is absolutely no doubt it is a massive, massive game, and a positive result would put Newcastle United in the driving seat for those Champions League spots. Let's finish things off, chaps. Thank you very much for your time. Chris Wharf, lovely to talk to you.
Likewise, yes. I enjoyed this. It was very good. Other than talking about it, basically I felt it was a bit therapeutic after what everyone threw on Saturday.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. Jacob, thanks a lot for your time, man. Good to see you.
Thank you. Nice to actually speak, unlike our experience yesterday at St James's Park.
You could have said anything to me.
I said some horrible things.
I've never liked you, Taylor, from the day I met you on the podcast, and I would have just went, yeah, it's great, isn't it? Brilliant stuff. Thanks, George. Thanks a lot for your time.
Look, I tell you, honestly, you know, we're still in the top four. We're still fighting for the Champions League, and Tottenham, you know, they've still got to go to Man United, no, they don't. They've got to play them at home. But yeah, come on, let's have a bit of positive.
Absolutely.
It's been a brilliant season so far. With one more push and Newcastle are there.
Wonderful stuff. Well, thanks very much, everyone out there, for listening. That is it from Pod on the Tyne. Get yourselves over to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod and pick up a subscription to The Athletic and pay just £1.99 a month for your first year. That's it. Have a lovely week. Take care. We will speak to you again after that Spurs game. Speak soon. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.